I always find it intriguing that we gather and sing. But we gather and sing for a variety of reasons, I'm sure. Partly because music goes deeper. Music cuts past our brain. Music has that emotive and heart power that just words don't. I can read a poem and it hits my brain. But I hear a poem to music. I listen to a song and it hits my emotions. And so yesterday afternoon, I was working in the home office there. The home office sounds very American, but I was working at home and I had music cranked. And it was old music. And after a while, I came upstairs and said to Shauna, "That is so good for my soul." And it's not like the words aren't what's good for her. It's the experience of the music. And that's part of why we sing. Because it cuts past just our head. And we are people of the heart. Oh, I want to be all logical and intellectual. But I run off feelings all the time. I'm feeling up. I'm not feeling up. I'm into it. I'm not into it. That's just how we are. Music cuts past the logic. But second reason we sing, and I'm sure there's lots more, but the second reason we sing is because we remember those words. You hear a sermon once, and lots of times you go, "Oh, good, I only hear that once." You can go online and torture yourself again if you want. But you hear a sermon once. But some of those songs we sang, you've sung 10 and 30 times. And they start to stick. The ideas start to stay because I'm repeating them. The Psalms are a songbook. Why did they sing? Why do we sing? Because it gets past just logic to heart. And because repeated songs stick. This is their songbook. When we pick up the Psalms, we are taking the book of an ancient people, the songbook of an ancient people, and reading the words. And we don't have the privilege of having the music. And lots of people are actually currently working on doing music for all of the Psalms. There's different projects going on, Brian Dirksen doing one of them, to try and put all of these to songs, because that's what they were. And so these are songs, and we're stepping into someone's songs. I've had a couple songs shape me, and these are really random. But I remember being in music class in about grade 5, and that would have been early 70s, and we sang a song, "This Land Is My Land, This Land Is Your Land." And it was a folk song from the 60s, I think. Some of you know better than me. And I remember getting from this song this sense that I was part of something bigger. And this was a place that belongs to you and me. Oh, and I know that somewhere in there, we lost the people it originally belonged to, and it wasn't quite as simple as the song made it, but it created a sense of belonging. And then from my high school years, another song that continues to shape us. "We are the champions, my friend. We'll go on fighting to the end. This land belongs to you and me." We'll go on fighting, and which song has become dominant? Which song do you still hear? And it shapes us, because what we sing, what we think about, affects how we actually live. It sinks in. And so we step into the Psalms, and we say, "Oh, it's just an old poem." But it has the power to shape. To shape how we live, and to shape how we interpret how we live. To make us people who live and think differently. So Psalm 99, after that long forever intro, a psalm that follows the theme of the song, Psalms, and the theme of the Psalms in so many ways is Yahweh, the God of Israel, the Lord, the English version says, is king. Yahweh is king. And this psalm focuses in on that target and helps us think about how to live it out. The Lord reigns. Let the nations tremble. And that's saying essentially our God is in charge. Everyone else is not. The Lord reigns. Let the nations tremble. He sits enthroned between the cherubim. Let the earth shake. Great is the Lord in Zion. He is exalted over all the nations. Let them praise your great and awesome name. He is holy. The king is mighty. He loves justice. You have established equity. In Jacob you have done what is just and right. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his footstool. He is holy. Moses and Aaron were among his priests. Samuel was among those who called on his name. They called on the Lord and he answered them. He spoke to them from the pillar of cloud. They kept his statutes and the decrees he gave them. Lord our God, you answered them. You were to Israel a forgiving God, though you punished their misdeeds. Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy mountain. For the Lord our God is holy. How you tell a story affects how other people experience it. How I remember something shapes how others experience it from me. Last night I was at my brother Keith's house and they got talking about being somewhere near Grand Cache and their kids being out at the edge of a cliff that went down to the mountain. And Keith was remembering this as a really fun and significant experience, and Anne was remembering it as a terrorizing moment where her kids were too close to the edge, right? And how we remember something and how we tell something actually shapes how we remember it. They go together. The words I use about God shape how I experience him. The metaphors, the pictures that we use to describe God actually have the power to shape how we understand and relate to him. And so in Psalm 99, we're being invited to be reshaped in how we view God. And it starts with this clear out statement, the Lord reigns. And you know, the people of Israel, the people for whom this was written and by whom this was written, didn't always experience that. They were actually a conquered people for much of their existence. They were a people with other nations ruling. But this becomes a declaration, a statement of fact. Our God is in control. But also a pronouncement. Despite the odds, despite the evidence, our God reigns. And that starts to shape me. When I start to believe that God is actually reigning, I start to interpret life's events differently. Our God reigns, and David is king, and everything is awesome. By the Babylonians, everything sucks. Our God reigns. And the psalm opens with this reminder that there's some truth I have to hold on to. There's some things that can shape how we experience reality. That no matter what's happening, the Lord reigns. Lots of their experience. There wasn't obvious evidence that God was reigning, they were winning. And then the first stanza, this psalm divides into three stanzas, each ending with the reminder that God is holy. The second verse in this stanza says, he sits enthroned between the cherubim in the temple of the Jewish people. It was a section called the Holy of Holies, where only the high priest could enter, and only he could only enter once a year. And inside there was the Ark of the Covenant. And on top of the Ark of the Covenant was the cover of the Ark. And on top of the cover of the Ark were two cherubim. And God's presence was focused there in the Jewish understanding. That was the center of his place. And this psalm says, he reigns among us in the temple in our city, in the temple in our temple, in our city. God reigns. And let the earth shake. And it's a almost arrogant, selfish statement. But if I'm a conquered people, it's also a statement of hope and of faith. That God's presence is tied up with our people. That he is involved very close. And in many ways, Psalm 99 is preaching to the choir. These people believe this. And the other people, the conquering nations, the surrounding peoples, they just don't care. The nations probably don't tremble. They ignore. They scoff. They blow this God off like they blow off other gods. And they blow off this little nation of Israel like they blow off others. This is still a statement of truth. It's a reminder that this is true even when I don't see the evidence. It isn't the reality they always lived. It's not always historical fact. But this is truth. That our God reigns. And then the first stanza ends with this invitation. Let them, let the nations, let the surrounding peoples praise your great and awesome name. And that serves as a reminder that this God is not only interested in Israel. He's not their pet God in their pocket who does what they want. He's interested in all the nations. Let them praise your great and awesome name. And then the stanza ends with this statement. He is holy. And as I said, all three of the stanzas end with this statement. And sometimes we get that word holy kind of reduced down to he is without sin and pure. Absolutely true. But way beyond without sin and pure, holy is first, he is distinct and separate. He is completely other. This God is not like us. This God is not like other gods. Our God reigns. He is separate. He is different. And part of his difference is what we often think of when we think of holiness, which is moral purity. But that isn't the whole thing. This God is other than, removed. We honor him. He is not like us. And then the second stanza takes us into how he relates to his creation. How does this God who is removed and distinct relate to us? He is both mighty and he loves justice. That this is a God who has power, but who uses that power for the good of others and of all. Who balances power with equity is the word the NIV uses. Fairness. It's related to equality. That this isn't a God with random power or random expressions of power who says, I want to do this and so I will do this. But this is a God of justice. And so a holy and separate God who is completely other has power and uses it fairly. And that's really stanza two. Except this fairness is firstly expressed in Jacob is the word used. It's the pet name for Israel, the nation. You have been good to us in Jacob, in Israel. You have done what is just and right. This isn't just a God who's removed. He is holy and other. But he is involved in a real situation with a real nation in real people's lives, and he's connected. And our story, the nation of Israel's story, this psalm says, is that you have done what is just and right. This isn't just a big God who randomly does whatever he wants, but this is a God who steps in and works with lives. In our circumstances, in the people of Israel's circumstances, the psalm says, you have worked in a direction, and you have worked for our good, and you have worked for our correction. And then the psalm, rather than inviting the nations to worship, says to the people of Israel, exalt the Lord our God. Honor him and worship at his footstool. He's on the throne. His feet are below him, and we bow below them. Again, because he is holy. But this isn't a God that just deals with nations and with the nation of Israel. This is a God who deals with people, with individuals. He sits on the throne. Yes. The nations tremble. Yes. Israel has experienced his goodness. Yes. But he's a God of people. Moses and Aaron experienced him. Samuel experienced him. And that's Psalm 3. And the psalm moves from this. God is on the throne reigning and the nations are scared, down to real life people. A God who deals with inequity, with real people. Moses and Aaron, the leaders of the people of the Exodus when they first were pulled together by God out of Egypt into a nation. They experienced God. Samuel, who becomes sort of the first prophet and is elevated in Jewish thinking and in the Jewish mind as a great man of God. They experienced God. This isn't a God who's just on the throne. This is a God who's involved, who steps in. Verse 7 says, he spoke to them from the pillar of cloud. He was completely separate and unapproachable, and yet he spoke and invites them. And they, in response, kept his statutes and the decrees he gave them. And so the psalm moves from this big God who is reigning right down to this big God who is reigning and dealing with individuals and talking to people. That's our God. Not just removed, not just ruling, but interacting. And when they heard from this God, they kept his statutes and decrees. They submitted. They responded and let him rule. And then, of course, the progression works the other way. The God on the throne who steps down to one nation, Israel, who steps down to people, invites those people to live a certain way. And those people respond to God, and they lead the nation to respond to God, and that leads the nations to respond to God. Exalt the Lord our God, and worship at his holy mountain, for the Lord our God is different, is separate, is a ruling God who isn't like all the other gods. You see, all the other gods in the ancient world were gods not involved in life. They were gods who were random and arbitrary in their actions. The human understanding of God up to that point in time was all-powerful beings riding in the clouds on their chariots, if you follow the Greek and Roman myths, and we're stepping back beyond that, who arbitrarily acted when they wanted, and the best humans could do is try to buy them off. That's the mindset of a god in the ancient mind. All I can do is just try to make the right offering, and if one doesn't work well, I'll try to make another one, and I'll see if I can keep the gods happy. This God is different. This God says, I'll be fair and just, and I will live among a people. And so God begins to write a story with this people of Israel. This is a God who shapes lives, who says, live this way, and if you respond to me, I'll respond to you. And now it's not random and arbitrary relating to the gods. It's living in sync with a God who's involved. And they're invited to let God write their story. See, what we believe, and I use the illustration of this land is your land versus we are the champions. What we believe shapes how we live. This is a separate, different God. And he invites us to respond to him and to have him involved in life. And then he deals with us in justice and fairness. Rich Mullins said years ago in a song, I believe what I believe is what makes me what I am. I did not make it. No, it is making me. What I believe is shaping me. This psalm says, our God reigns and our God is involved. Submit to him. Worship him. Our God is connected. And so these aren't people who are worshiping a God who is removed on a cloud and they're just trying to buy him off. This is a God involved with his people, writing a story. He lives in the temple in their land. And God has stepped into human life in a way that no other God did. He is different. He is holy. And that's countercultural in their world. And that's countercultural in ours. That we have a God who is involved and who wants to write our story as a part of his story. That he wants to shape how we live, and he still interacts with us as people. See, this psalm is written from the Israeli perspective, the nation of Israel. But we could write it again from the perspective of the church. That God stepped into human history and dwelled among his people in the church. And then we could write it again, God stepped into human history and dwelled among the people of Balmoral. And then we could write it again, God stepped into history and worked among the choices and activities that Wayne was involved in. And gave opportunity for difference. And God is writing a story, and part of the difference of this God, part of the holiness of this God is that he's actually involved with people. And he's actually involved with us. And I'm watching from the sidelines a little bit as Shailene lands in North Africa. Ah, but this is a God who writes stories and who invites us to worship with our lives, not just with our words. And I think back to the story. Somewhere I got this goofy idea that I didn't want my kids to just live in suburban North America their whole lives. And so I had this idea that at some point, and this is when the kids were really small, at some point I wanted to do like a family mission trip, and I wanted to take them to see, and in my mind I think it was inner city Los Angeles. But it morphed and it changed, and almost 10 years ago we were getting ready to leave and go to Zambia in Africa, and Shailene was the grade 8, 14 or 15 year old kid who said, thanks a lot, you're dragging me off to Africa. I'm going to lose all my friends, and my life will never be the same. That's pretty well right. But I didn't know that story. I didn't know that I'd be standing here today while she's running. No, she's not running. She's in the most barren place I've seen for a long time. We do actually have pictures, but we both left our phones in the vehicle. But God's writing stories. And I don't just worship because God is big. I do that. He is different. But I also worship because in his separateness, he is connected to human life. Oh, and you can tell other stories. your stories about where God has been different and distinct, where he has been involved. They called on the Lord, and he answered them. And he said, I am involved. So part of the distinction of this God, of our God, of the God who sent Jesus, is that he is reigning and ruling, but he is writing his story in our lives. And we get to shape our story to his story and then honor him. And I honor God not just by gathering and singing a song or multiple songs or listening to a sermon. I honor God by the story I write with my life. We honor God by the story we write as a church. We honor God by the story we write as a collection of God's people who are supporting missions, who have, I saw the iceberg and I saw missionary names there all over the world. From Mexico to, where are the Marshaks? Poland? And that's the God we serve. And so the invitation of this psalm is tell yourself truth. Tell yourself that God reigns. And sing it and say it and let it soak into our soul. Because we can convince ourselves, the world's out of control, man. It's going nuts. No. God's still there. And he's still writing his story. And we can participate. And he's interested in the nations and he's ruling over them. And he's interested in his people and he's ruling over them. And he's interested in the individual and wants to rule there. And then it works the other way. As I submit, then the people around me, God's people, submit. And then the world gets shaped. So we worship. We write a new song that reminds us, the Lord reigns. He is holy. Exalt Yahweh our God and worship at his holy mountain. For the Lord our God is holy. Let's pray. Father, we submit. We're not reigning, but we also confess that sometimes we're concerned that you're not reigning. And we get convinced by the world around us that everything's out of control, but the Lord reigns. And so we submit. And I ask that you'd help us to find the threads of the story that you are writing and to fit into it. And to fit our stories into yours and to let you reign and to submit and honor you, not just with our words and our songs, but with our lives and our stories. Thanks for these people who faithfully gather, who faithfully live, who faithfully give and worship. And I pray that you'd keep helping us to write a story in which you reign and you are shown to be holy. Pray these things in your name. Amen.